Welcome to the weekly highlight show for USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. My name is Chris Sharp and I am your host. The Coach and Coordinator Podcast is here to help you lead the next generation of football players. Whether it's a tutorial on implementing new schemes, leadership seminars, or ongoing trends in football, our channel is a resource for you. To start off the week, we invited Dan Hatman, the Director of a Scouting Academy, onto the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Hatman was an NFL scout for the Philadelphia Eagles, the New York Giants, and the New York Jets. His goal is to help coaches and scouts achieve their dream job in the football industry. Here's a snippet from Hatman's interview this week where he tells us how to become a successful candidate for an open position.
I think it takes time. It's usually not the first time through. I mean, occasionally you'll hear stories of like the person that has the one-off and they're just more impressive than anybody else. But usually it's the systematic growth of having so many different people vouching for you and what you've done and backing up what they're seeing themselves. But I think when you go in and you get that opportunity, if you've been invited in, so you're part of the interview process, I try to recommend that you got to carry with that a level of confidence. And clearly there's been a belief in you or they wouldn't let you in the door. Right? It's not like we open doors to 100 different people to interview for jobs. Most job searches we see are anywhere from two, a lot of times it's in the four or five candidates. Sometimes we'll get up towards double digits, but it's not most of the time not past that in terms of on-site or in-person. So if you're in that place, then you've got the prereqs done. They have a belief in you to some point. Now you have to prove to them that you're that kind of person. A lot of times that's what I find it comes down to. Do they like you? Do they want to be around you? Because a lot of hours in this business around people. And I think that goes both ways. I think part of the interview process for a candidate should be the recognition of whether or not you can make it there, whether you can be a sustainable asset to them. So, for example, if you're the kind of person that likes to be jovial, you like to crack jokes, you like to have a good time, if you go in to interview in a place, and they're very buttoned up, very professional, you'll fake it through that interview. You might even get that job. But you're going to have a really hard time being their best employee because that jovial side of you is going to want to come out. You're going to want to crack jokes. You're going to want to have that good time. And if that's not the way they carry themselves, there might be a competency there, but I think there's going to be a ceiling put on. And you're probably not going to be the best person on that team in their eyes, and then chances are they're not going to promote you. And if you don't get promoted, if you get stagnated in one place, the rest of us in football always look at that track record and go, well, why was he there for X number of years and never got promoted?
The assistant head coach and offensive coordinator for Wise High School in Maryland, Coach Steve Rapp, has helped his team achieve four state championships. One of the keys to Wise High School's success is their power running game. And on Tuesday, Coach Rapp discussed how more offenses are utilizing it to attack defenses.
I had a conversation about a month ago with our running back coach. And what I told him was that I'm watching college football. And as I'm watching college football, you're starting to see teams in 11 personnel. You're starting to see teams in back to 21 personnel. You're watching the Ravens, they're in a lot of 13 personnel. And what's happening is as the defenses are getting faster and better spread, the offenses are going back to smash mouth. It's just coming from the pistol to the gun now. So it's almost like, a couple years ago, back in the day, the Steelers made the 3-4 defense famous, then everybody went to a 3-4. Then all of a sudden, 3-4 kind of faded out, and everybody went back to a 4-3. And then, now you're getting the 3-3 stack enters the conversation, and then, you're getting three high safety out there at the Big 12, road coverage, and there's all types of things that are going on to get faster people on the field. So as you're countering that, as an offensive mind, we can say, well, we'll just get bigger people on the field now. ISO has made its way back into Saturday afternoon. Now they're just calling it zone insert, which, when I was 6 years old, that was the first play they taught us. You called it lead, blast, belly, whatever it was you wanted to call it. It was ISO, period. So as these things morph, right, now all that's happening is we're running ISO, but we're running it from the pistol, and you might be reading the backside backer that the double's supposed to be going to. Still the same play, right? It's just not coming from underneath the center. I just think that, yes, I do believe it has an advantage, because I don't believe that defenses have to practice against I-set formations every week. But they do practice against 2x2 and 3x1 every week. So now you've created something that kids can't get tough in a day and a half. Okay, so a mindset of running the football and being lead power counter overall is something that we establish on day one, and we never go away from it.
Coach Brad Dixon has been leading athletic programs for most of his life. With a background coaching in football, track and field, and basketball, Coach Dixon has been heavily involved with sports. Despite his busy slate, Coach Dixon manages to still make sure he and all the members of his program have time to spend with their own respective home teams. Hear how Coach Dixon balances family and football on Wednesday's episode of the Coach and Coordinator Podcast.
And fortunately, I ran into Coach Howler and, you know, through the track world, and got to reading his Feed the Cats and how he decided in track he was going to quit running and start sprinting and try to, you know, as he says, go to the finish line, you know, 80% in shape and 100% healthy, and, you know, try to get his work done in a shorter amount of time and a more intense amount of time. And so we applied that to football. We wanted to, you know, instead of thinking how much can we give our athletes, we wanted to try to find that effective dose, or that minimum effective dose that we could, you know, train our football team to be able to be successful while also monitoring their, you know, health, and you know, we cut out conditioning and we went all in on this sprint-based, you know, just effective training that has nothing to do with that old school military, and really wanted to focus on, you know, the football side of things. And hey, if this doesn't make us better, we're going to get rid of it. We're going to let our kids go home early, and we're going to try to maximize an hour and 45 minutes of practice time. We're going to give them the weekends off, and we're going to try to make football fun again and not make it a grind, you know, as some of these people have really bought into this grind mentality. And so that's kind of where the football side of things came from. And so what I found was that more and more coaches were buying into that, you know, with their athletes, and there's still a lot, it's still kind of a new phenomenon, I would say. But then I was seeing all these crazy schedules and hours that these assistant coaches would tell me they were putting in, and nights and mornings and weekends and all these different things. And so I thought it'd be good at Chicago to kind of talk about how, you know, we try to use that same less is more mentality with our coaching staff. You know, I talked about my young kids. All my assistants have kids. We've got them from, I think, 8 is the oldest, down to a 1-year-old who are one of my assistants that had a baby actually the Monday of the state championship week, or the Monday or the Tuesday 2 years ago in 2018, which was pretty crazy. Kind of snuck her in there right after the semifinal win and before the state championship. But we just can't put in 50 hours a week doing football. We just can't. With our families, and you know, I think as coaches, with the technology that we have, you know, if you're not maximizing those pieces of technology, and you're still forcing your coaches to come in for hours and hours and sit in rooms and input data into the computer or watch hours and hours of film and create these huge lavish game plans, you know, I think you're overvaluing, you know, the coaching side of things and undervaluing the talent side of things.
On Thursday, our own Keith Grabowski spoke with Southside High School's head football coach, Kenny Simpson. Coach Simpson has seen a lot during his career, and he shares his experiences in his book, Find a Way, What I Wish I Knew When I Became a Head Football Coach. Coach Simpson offers advice to new head coaches on how to go about assembling their own coaching staffs.
But I've always tried to make sure the guys that were more than likely going to be retained understood where I was coming from and why I was doing what I was doing, and then I tried always not to ever talk negative about what had been done in the past. I wasn't a part of that. I don't know anything about that. All I know is where we are now and where we need to move. And so I think doing that helps a little bit. I think also having a goal of what you think is most important as far as where you put guys on your staff positionally. But also, I think you need to understand that I personally want as much diversity on my staff as possible, not just diversity in color, but diversity in attitudes and diversity in the way guys are as far as their personality is. You know, I need to have guys that can be disciplinarians, and I need to have guys that can go hug on kids, and I need to have guys that are great on a whiteboard, and guys that are good with technology, and guys that are, you know, that are good in the weight room. And so it's not just you're going to coach DBs. It's what other attributes does that guy have, you know, and where can I plug him in where he can grow himself as a coach and he can also help our program. And I think when you go into a program, you need to understand it's not just coaching DBs or coaching outside linebackers or coaching whatever it is, but I try to give each coach on my staff multiple off the field, I guess you can call them duties or tasks or whatever you want, that fit their personality more. And I intentionally try to also make sure I am the, you know, if I've got a staff full of guys that are kind of hardcore guys, well, I've got to be the guy that's more into it with the kids, more have a better relationship there. If I've got a bunch of guys that are younger, like I do now, that have great relationships with the kids, I've got to be the disciplinarian. So it's always kind of balancing what you want and being aware. You know, coaching football is like everything else, it's a people business. And understanding the psychology of your team and your staff, I think is, especially for a young coach, is something that gets overlooked a lot.
To conclude the week, we spoke with RPI's defensive coordinator, Jeff Didman. During the interview, Coach Didman explained how he developed his defensive scheme and how he helps teach his defense how to show multiple looks throughout the season.
You know, it's funny, we were truly a 4-2-5 field under defense. That's our base. And, you know, with the two high shell, base quarters is who we are, and we expand dramatically from that. We utilize a stand-up defensive end of the boundary, a rush end, and we've used that position to create our multiplicity, if that's even a word. But we utilize him to get into odd fronts. We use that position as well as how we're going to rotate our coverages, how we're going to get extra people into the box. And, you know, I'll give you a quick story. You know, we were basic when we first installed this defense and held tried and true to our base front and our base coverages. And as the season went on, we needed to get into 8-man coverages. We needed to take away some different throwing lanes for some of the teams we were going to play. So within that week we were going into an opponent, we installed our odd front principles, and within a week we played probably more than 85% of our snaps were in our odd front that we installed that Tuesday, and we played over 90 snaps in that game. It was a triple overtime game, but we came out as a completely different defense, and we recognized how easy it was to use like terms and like techniques for most of the positions. And it may have been a tweak for one position here or a tweak for a position there, but it allowed us to get multiple and look different. And from there, our world expanded. You know, again, going back to 18 as a great picture of, you know, we probably installed 30 to 35% of our defense in the preseason compared to what we ended up playing by the end of the year, from fronts to coverages to pressures. And it's a testament to our assistant coaches and laying the groundwork of simple terms, simple techniques that can be used in multiple different ways. And, you know, that's what I encourage for all coaches that want to expand their defense is to create that foundation, to lay that groundwork of what their techniques are, what their fundamentals are, and you can build from that. So that's where that evolution came from, of recognizing how multiple we could get with simple like terms for our players to allow them to play fast, physical, and to finish plays.
Thank you for listening to the USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast weekly highlight show. To help support the channel, you can subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Play, and on iTunes as well. And don't forget to give us a 5-star review. B be sure to tune in next week for more content and more analysis.